Yeah, I never heard the term before.
Well, just stop making shit up because no one's
coming. It's on IMDb, so it must
and
be
welcome
true.
To the Down in Front Podcast, the official podcast of downinfrontpodcast.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining. If this is your first episode, we want to say we thank you so much. We appreciate you hanging out with us for about 4 or 5 hours, who knows, as we're going to get into our in-depth review of The Lion King, directed by Jon Favreau in theaters right now, starring a bunch of amazing people, mainly Donald Glover and Beyonce. But before we get into that, before we talk about our particular sort of spoilers, we usually like to go around the table, talk about what we've been watching along with if we're sipping on anything or we're going to do any other shout outs. So I'm going to introduce one of my best friends. We grew up in the way back in the day in the small little town in Tennessee. It was a small town. Just a small time girl.
I'm from a big city.
Okay, you just fucked that up. It's okay. Beautiful Brylan. Brylan, what's going on, man? What you sipping on tonight, and what else you got for me?
Hey, what's going on this evening? I am chilling, enjoying this respite from the warm weather that's outside, so it's nice and cold today. What I am sipping on right now is I decided to get something of a remake, much like the movie we're watching this evening, so... pop it real quick. So I got some Mike's Harder Lemonade. So much like all good remakes,
they add what?
Different to the
original. Thing?
Why is that a thing? Why are you drinking it? I can feel the tooth decay from here from the amount of sugar in that thing.
So in case I don't like what's this, oh, let me get a sip in this. Let me try it. Oh gosh. We'll see if I finish that. But in case I don't finish that, I did get some Gatorade Lemon Lime as well to wash it down.
Why would you pay money for that? Like, that's...
What, do you want me to steal the Gatorade?
No. The Mike's...
Mike's Harder Lemon.
Like, if someone... If I was walking home and someone's $2. Like, hey, do you want this for free? I probably would say no because I just don't want to carry it. Like,
you should say that to most open drinks from strangers. Like a general rule.
Oh.
No, I mean, sometimes you look at a party.
I didn't spend much on it. It's only $2. But, anyway.
Yes.
I wanted to take a moment to send a sip out to some wonderful, hardworking people in the movie business. Warren, it's okay. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I did want to send a sip out to movie trailer editors for the year of 2019, because we've definitely seen a different trend in movie trailers this year. A lot of, I can understand people that do not want to watch movie trailers nowadays because they had gotten into the pattern of just do it being mini stories and everything. But we've seen a nice turn of events where, if we look at the in-game marketing and the trailers for that, there's more about like making sure you're in the right feeling to go see that movie after 10 years of telling that story. Or there's other movie trailers that I've seen right now that are just getting me excited to watch movies and I don't want to see anything else about them, whether it's the first trailer for It 2 or the new Top Gun Maverick trailer, which I think hit all the right notes for nostalgia and everything when it comes to that type of movie. So there's a lot of really cool trailers out there that don't spoil the stories anymore, and they actually are all about the tone and the mood of the movies. So big ups to those trailer editors for doing a great job and being very creative with the movie trailers this year.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to also kind of give a shout out. I really wish that the people who cut those trailers, sometimes I know it's a different company, but sometimes a lot of those trailers are pretty good, and I don't think they ever get the recognition or any rewards for it. So I appreciate your shout out there, Brylan.
No problem. You should check them out one day.
Nope. So it's always great to see your face and have you on as one of my best friends, because we know everybody else on this podcast is close to being trash. I'll toss it over to another one of my best friends who is in the beautiful, beautiful state of New York State. The luscious Mocha Mike. Mocha, what's going on, man? What you sipping on tonight and what else you got for me?
Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? So happy to be here again. So happy to have our special guest here tonight. As for what I'm drinking a little beverage called Stargazer. It's a double New England style India pale ale. And I feel like it was a good representation of tonight's movie, because gazing at the stars is kind of important to with the Lion King. I don't know what this is like. We're going to find out later on. But as for what I've been watching, I had the great misfortune of going to the movies on Sunday to see Midsommar, the new horror movie by Ari Aster. And I say misfortune because that movie was bad. I hadn't had the chance to see Hereditary yet. I've heard nothing but amazing things. I assume this movie would be good. But I did say something when I first saw the trailer for it, which was, I don't know if I trust movies that advertise to me via Instagram, which is the only place I saw trailers for this. But I went against my best judgment, saw it anyway, and boy, was it a letdown. Yeah, I was really, really disappointed by it. But at least it was a beautifully shot movie, really well directed, but somehow still bad. I don't know. Anyway, that's a story for another review. But that's what I've been watching. That's what I'm drinking. And I'm excited to talk about yet another disappointing movie with you all tonight.
Wow. Okay. starting with the negativity. Gotta love them. Thanks so much, Mocha. I appreciate you being here. And also, I appreciate you and Brylan giving some really crisp can pops. So good on you guys. Good on you guys for that.
My eyes are burning from this.
Brylan, you almost killed me. I had to turn my video off. Let's not get back into that. Please. I'm going to toss it over to a guy who I used to hang out with, but he doesn't text me any longer, but it's okay because I'm not pretty sad, right? The beautiful Blewett. What's going on, man? Love the beard happening. I thought it was a playoff beard, but that just doesn't make any sense. What you sipping on tonight, and what else you got for me?
First of all, I was really surprised you didn't call on Megan there as soon as you mentioned a friend. So first of all, I'm drinking water because, you know, it's a thing to drink. Mocha, you're going to absolutely love Stargazer. I've had it a bunch of times, and it's phenomenal. I'm also in quite a big New England IPA kick right now. Pretty much if it says Eniapa on the can, I'm in for it.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's the acronym. Also, I can somewhat agree with Mocha. Midsommar, to me, was a gorgeous movie to look at, and was like kind of a nice little visual ride, but it definitely fell flat in the storytelling department. It just didn't have that strong of kind of goals and like characters. Somewhat didn't make any sense. Yeah, it was pretty to look at, but didn't have a ton of substance behind it. So I'll say that. Also, I started Chernobyl, so that's technically what I've been watching. I'm one episode in.
Can we spoil it for you?
I hope that everyone makes it out alive. Yeah. That's you know, it was technically happened before I was born, so I, you know, I was not alive for it. I don't remember it, so I'm going in blind, boys.
Were you hoping the Titanic made it to England when you watched Titanic?
No, see, the fun thing is that I accidentally read the newspaper before that came out, so I did spoil that the Titanic sank. And I didn't go to see that
in the library looking at old time.
Yeah, what, you don't use the I'm gonna forget this word,
microfiche,
is it that?
Yeah, where you just spin the thing and it just goes through the newspapers.
That's
yeah.
The thing you use on the fruit to like file it down.
That's a mandolin.
What?
Or that's a peeler.
Isn't the mandolin one of the villains from Iron Man 3?
That's the mangolin.
No, that's the pangolin.
Yeah. I thought you were going to go with the Mandalorian.
Shut up. Thanks for being on here, Blewett. It's always great to see your face, so I appreciate you being here.
You're welcome.
Now, We're not going to get into all those damn tangents before we get to the reviews, though. Got to chop it off at the legs. I'm going to toss it over to our resident Disney. I called her fanatic, but she's probably just a scholar. One of my best friends, Miss Megan Arnold, is here, finally coming back on the show. Super excited. Megan, what's going on with you? What have you been watching? Looks like you got a couple of shows you want to talk about. But what else have you been drinking tonight?
Well, it is lovely to be back. Always fun to join you guys. I'm not sure that I am a fanatic or a scholar, but I appreciate it. I have been also drinking some nice ice cold water and some hot tea, because why not? You know, it's summer. You gotta keep it balanced with the ice water and the hot tea. So I have been watching a couple things, but I'll keep it down to one. They just released season 4 of Veronica Mars on Hulu, and I'm super stoked about it. There were 3 seasons when it originally premiered, and then a couple books were written in conjunction with Rob Thomas, who created Veronica Mars.
Wait, and Rob then, Thomas of Matchbox 20?
No, different Rob Thomas. That's immediately what I
thought. That was a pretty smooth reference, Mocha.
It was good. It was good. So then there was a GoFundMe of some sort for a Veronica Mars movie a couple years back, and so they finally released another season of the show. And as always, I loved it. It was kind of a brutal ending that I won't go into, but people are in a bit of an uproar about it. So you should check it out. It's a good show. But I'm excited to talk about Lion King with you guys.
Well, as always, it's great to have you on. So very excited to get your opinion on this big movie that a lot of people are talking about. My name is Warren. I will be your host this evening. I am currently sipping on some remnants of some root beer. I'm pretty tired, so didn't do any booze for tonight because I'm going to be falling asleep shortly after. But what I've been watching, I want to actually shout out a show called Special that's on Netflix right now, and everybody needs to go watch this show. It's actually casted and created by a guy named Ryan O'Connell, and he basically kind of goes through his life living with cerebral palsy, trying to find the life that he wants, living in LA as a gay man. And so I was kind of raving about the show. Me and Emma sort of binged it probably kind of one night. It's really, really easy to binge. I'm talking about these episodes are maybe 15 minutes long, sometimes even shorter. So I definitely would suggest, please go check the show out. I can only imagine it's going to win at least 2 or 3 Emmys, lots of good acting credits in here, and also a lot of side characters that are just real and kind of fully sort of formed. I think if you've seen a show, it's kind of close to the what's that show with Aidy Bryant? Did anybody see that show? Starts with an S. No, I'll look it up. It's kind of close to that show that was on sort of Hulu, so I'll definitely kind of check that out. But I think it's really funny, but it's also like really heartwarming, and it's just probably the most down to earth show I've seen in a long time. So definitely go check that out. That's Special. That's on Netflix right now. And with that, we are hit our spoiler section. So if you have not seen Lion King in 2019 and The Lion King from before, I believe the year was 92?
Four.
94? Okay.
You were right there for the rhyme, buddy. Yourself up.
I was close. If you haven't seen either one of these Lion King, we definitely would be sort of spoiling it. We also will be talking about a bit of the entire sort of scenario of remakes. There's a lot more remakes coming, so we definitely want to kind of talk about that a little bit. So we're going to get into our spoilers. We'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll get into our full spoiler edition of The Lion King. Thank you. are back, and we are the Down in Front podcast. We have our special guest with Megan here, and tonight we're giving you a spoiler edition of The Lion King in theaters right now. Definitely go check this out, at least for the music, because we have the beautiful and amazing Hans Zimmer coming back from a score, the only movie he won an Oscar for. So definitely thought that was actually a nice little tidbit of information. We're going to break this up into a couple of different sections. So as we usually do, we're going to talk a little bit about the characters, definitely main so the actual story. Then we'll transition to talk about really the differences, because that's what really what we need to talk about. Overall thoughts on sort of Disney remakes. What do you think kind of makes a good remake, and also any other future films? Because we know that Mulan has been sort of announced along with the Little Mermaid casting. So before we get into all those details, I want to start with talking about the actors and the characters, voiceover, and the story. I will toss it over to Brylin. Says Brylin, start us off, please.
Yeah, so the Lion King remake for 2019. I'm going to start off by giving a nod out to probably the best performers in this movie, which is the animators of the special effects of this film. So this movie, much like the original Lion King, is a animation landmark. I mean, every animal in here, I believe, is a CG creation, and that they just use real backdrops to film all of this. And it is mind-blowing how well CG has gotten to the point where the animation quality for here, if you look at the original Lion King, they're trying to kind of humanize animal movements and bring to more of that fantastical world to it. This is going the other way to make it into that uncanny valley of photorealism and, oh, wow, this is a lion that can talk every once in a while. And it can be unnerving, but it's also fascinating that they actually have the technology now to pull this off. Like everything, like when Simba's playing with Mufasa and it's like biting on his ear and they're rolling around and everything, I'm like, that's how the lions do it in real life. And it's awesome to watch them do all these lion-like things the whole time, but they're also carrying on these conversations about the circle of life and what it means to be king at the same time. And I thought it was a really cool mix of a way of bringing to life these characters in a totally different aesthetic that can actually be, make people a lot more interested in this type of story as well.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that I was sort of looking forward to. And then when it happens, I was like, man, these things look so real. I'm not sure how to feel right now because I just never seen it before. I think we've seen the Lion King, or at least I've seen the Lion King sort of a million times, and almost to the point where I can quote a lot of different sections of the movie. But it was just weird to see that these things look so real. And, you know, we're probably going to talk about this in a joke a little bit later, but it was the same scenario we talked about the Winnie the Pooh movie, where the Winnie the Pooh stuffed animal looked way too realistic, and it made people a little uncomfortable because it's not really supposed to look like that, and he's supposed to talk. So I think it kind of went into that realm of, I'm not sure how to actually process. Like, my brain sat there thinking, I'm not sure how to process this. Like, I understand they're not real, but they look way too real. And so I'm not entirely sure if I should like it, if I don't like it, but I definitely have to
Warren, back
giving props. Yeah.
Specifically for me, it messed with me, their mouth movements. Like, yeah, seeing an animal that I know what they look like when they're quote unquote talking, then move their mouths to form human words took me all sorts of out of the movie. Like, yeah. I know that's not what a lion looks like. Also, Brylin, I'll somewhat disagree. Like, I think they digitally composited everything. So even the backgrounds, like, they didn't have a drone fly through Tanzania and then composite it in. I'm pretty sure they just built everything from scratch. The CGI definitely wasn't perfect. Like, some of their movement, they had that, like, float along. You see this in video games a lot.
When they do the long-distance running, especially of the lions, it looks kind of weird.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that in 5 years, it's not going to look great. You know, that's to, for me, all these movies that have are like special effects masteries, unless they are that utterly technically good, it's not something I would ever pitch a movie based on. The last thing I'll say about the CG, and then I'll let Mocha finally explode, is that the CG, because it looks so realistic, also took me out of the movie because it really drove home like the weirdness of like a zebra and a lion chilling together. Like, I know that's the whole point of the Circle of Life, but when they were like obviously cartoons, it like Disneyified it and like entered this fantastical space. Whereas the entire time that like they were real animals, I was like, yeah, they just all eat each other. Like, this isn't real. I've seen plenty of these documentaries and this is not how that happens.
But that's it. Yeah. Also, it goes into this new. That's what I'm kind of gathering from this. There's this entirely new scenario. It's not. It's although it looks real, we also have to kind of like change our way of thinking a little bit in this type of new technology that's available. And I don't think, at least for me, I don't think it's fair when somebody says, "Oh, I didn't like the way it looked," or "I'm not sure." At least my stance is, I'm not sure how I'm supposed to feel because I know it looked amazing. And well, I understand all the words were the same thing, but I don't know.
I don't think it necessarily looked bad. And I also, clearly, there's two reasons. One, it drove out how unrealistic of a storyline it is with the animals. And then two, the mouse making distinctly non-animal motions. Like, that totally messed with my brain.
Fair.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but, I mean, the one thing I love about it, though, is that, I mean, it's visually amazing to watch, and it's something that your mind is blown. Like, how did they even make this in the first place? Just like how the first Lion King, it actually raised the bar for 2D animation, the way it was done, the motion that they actually had the animators like draw lions as they were moving to like kind of capture that motion that they have in the first one. That they're doing kind of the same thing here. And I think because there's no humans in it, it kind of grabs you into that story a bit more. And you're just like visually stunned the whole time, not sure how to process it, but it's an enjoyable way of being kind of baffled at the same time. And that's one thing I really liked is when they did talk, we don't see that CG mouth that usually pops up when animals were talking in other movies. It looks kind of natural of how a lion would actually talk if it knew English.
I'm curious to see if this movie is in a different language, if they're going to change that. Probably not, but I'm curious to see if they'll change it to try to match how they're saying that in the foreign language. Mocha, what you got?
That would require an insane amount of re-editing. I don't think that'd be really feasible. What I was going to say, though, regarding the graphics is, like, yeah, you guys are right. This is absolutely, like, a gorgeous movie. And in fact, that's like one of the things that I can get to this movie that I can't take away from. It was absolutely just stunning. And this point was kind of, I guess, countered by Blewett already. But I had an interesting thought during this, which was the notion that we have this terminology within computer generation, where our computer generated graphics called the Uncanny Valley, where when you make a human look like a little too human, via computer generated graphics, it registers incorrectly in our brain. Like, we know it's not supposed to be that way. And so it makes us feel uncomfortable. And I was thinking about how, I wonder if that's just a relation to us recognizing other humans, because in this movie, I did not get that same sense at all. And I had the conscious thought, okay, this is all CG. Okay. Obviously lions don't talk in real life, but it looks so spot on realistic. And yet I didn't feel like I was getting close to that area where it was becoming weird. So I was thinking for a moment that maybe it wasn't even feasible, but it seems that Blewett was made very uncomfortable by them regardless. So I guess that kind of blows that out of the water. But that same realism also made me have a lot of thoughts about the world that we're set in for The Lion King that I never considered in any of my viewings before. And obviously as a kid, I didn't think about this, but even when I saw Lion King as an adult, but you know, this in this world, the lions rule, quote unquote, benevolently over the pride lands and maintain a balance in terms of how nature interacts. They keep the hyenas from overfeeding. They allow animals to exist, but they also make it very clear in this movie that they still do eat those animals. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what this is, what it's actually like in this society, because it's very clearly a monarchy. all these other animals that are not that are herbivores live here. But like on a given day, do the lions like do they draw straws to see who has to be fed to Mufasa and his harem of lionesses? Do like are all the animals just completely okay with the notion that any given day their king is going to pop out of nowhere and just take one of their babies? But because they're not all dying, that they're just like kind of cool with it. Like I'm very, very interested in what society is like for this community of animals.
Yeah. Probably like
Joe the antelope. Eastern he was Germany. A good guy. Stuff Mufasa had to eat that day.
Would say Bullet.
It's probably like Eastern Germany with the Stasi running around everywhere. You're like, all right, I guess communism is better, but like Bill's not coming to the bar anymore. Also, it's funny enough that they got that wrong. That lions are the hunters, and traditionally hyenas are scavengers. So, mm-hmm. like technically speaking, like the hyenas wouldn't be over hunting.
It's well, the lionesses that hunt.
Mm-hmm. No, that one's also false. It's like both of them.
No.
Mainly, it's the lioness.
I did. Oh, actually, this is another point that I was wondering about in the movie because I didn't pick up on this as a kid in the cartoon, and I don't know if they make a point out of it. But in the cartoon, is it obvious that Mufasa has a harem? Because in this movie, he definitely had a harem. They like to talk to themselves as like the lions, like this whole community of people, but those are just all his women.
Sarabi's his wife.
Yes, yeah, Sarabi's his wife, but like those are all his women. Poor Scar doesn't get any of them. No wonder he's so
I believe it's
up.
Called concubines.
Well, that's in Mulan. We're not there just yet.
Tagadus, is that racist?
that is in Mulan. That's an actual plot point. That's definitely not racist. In any case, I do want to expand off one small thing that you said, Milka, because now that you mentioned that, I started to, at least now with this ultra realism, I'm like, oh, wait, exactly what were the creators trying to say when Simba goes away and finds his new life of being sort of an omnivore vegetarian, knowing that you don't actually have to eat other animals to survive?
And they bugs.
Flourish, yeah, but other like... omnivore, like they have to eat bugs and stuff, but they still can live in harmony without eating each other. And the amount of greenery and like water in that area where they were was way more than at Fry Rock. So I was curious, is like, wait a second, exactly what are you trying to say here? Do I not need to eat animals and we can still survive completely fine?
And I see, here's the thing, like those kind of questions, I think I don't know if they come up because I am now a 32-year-old man seeing this instead of like an 8-year-old boy, like when it first came out, or if it's just because it looks so realistic that it caused me to have these realistic thoughts about what this world was like. Because those are things that like I feel like no matter how many times I watched the original Lion King, I never thought about the fact that that Simba becomes an insectarian or whatever during his time out in exile. And while I was watching this movie, I kept thinking about like, boy, he sure does have a lot of like mass for a lion that's only been eating bugs.
400 like, pounds. Yeah, that threw me out of the movie too. I'm like, there's not enough nutrients in those bugs to gain that much weight.
You gotta wave your hand away from that,
guys. The only lion that looked like he ate nothing but insects was Scar, who looked famished the entire time, even though there's like a 4-year time skip where he apparently eats every animal that exists. Like he's still super scrawny as if he's never had a meal in his life.
Yeah, the lesson is that you don't eat the animals right next to you. You just eat the animals that are totally insignificant to who you are.
Also, what is this movie trying to say about like about class relations, all right? These insects, they don't have a voice, but does that mean that they're also not sentient?
Only dung beetle
are sentient in this?
It's like that billboard from PETA where it's just like a cat, a bunny, a dog, a chicken, a cow, and it's just like draw the line where food is. Like,
Timon and Pumbaa like go like give Simba or give each other a lot of shit about how uncomfortable it is having a lion around because lions might eat them and they're afraid of being eaten. But then they have this really morbid feast of the bugs where they're like pinning them down and being like, oh yeah, this one's filled with cream. Why don't you eat this one? And it was like, inflicting the same harm on the bugs as the lions do on them.
What about Timon, who's like talking about the line of life instead of the circle life? And it's just like, you're alive and then you're not. And then he just eats a bug. You know, it's just like, well, did that thing was a living creature too.
And those lines that they're adding was not in the original 94 version, especially the line of life. So I thought that was interesting that they added they definitely added a bit more color to some of their sort of lines to add a little more context, especially Timon and Pumbaa. But I know they will talk about that later.
Quick question: was the hair going to Rafiki in the original movie?
Oh hell no! That hair adventure is totally made up.
So that hair adventure was like an extra half hour.
I was going to say dung beetle dough, but I was like, "What is this? Following hair?
Yeah. The hair wasn't there, but Rafiki does get it's when Simba. Wow, I haven't seen The Lion King, but I still remember this scene. It's when Simba like lays down and he finally becomes a peace when he's with Timon and Pumbaa. He goes there and says, "Oh, this is the light." He lays down and kind of causes a gust of wind to go through and then travels. And then Rafiki kind of like senses that. And then he understands that Simba's still alive. And then that's when he draws the mane around his actual face. Oh. So it does happen. Did they like stretch it out? I was like, what the fuck is this?
They had an hour and a half movie and they're like, we need to get to 2 hours.
And also the Disney animators hid the word sex in that tough to win that. Up from Simba.
So here's something I want to say really quick, since we mentioned Timon and Pumbaa and the changes that came along with them. So there were a couple of dialogue changes and scene changes around them, but I think that Jon Favreau made most of those changes for the sake of adding a little bit of flavor to Simba's time in exile. But I think it actually changes a lot more about that time because of the implications of what's going on there. So in the original movies, Timon and Pumbaa just live out on their own in the jungle. They don't have like a whole bunch of friends around them. It's just those two, and Simba joins them. And in this movie, it turns out that the place they live in the jungle is like a whole society of, it's like an island of misfit toys as far as like the vegetarian animals in the movie go. And that's all cute and all, because you get all these extra characters that you get to play around with and have like funny scenes with. But it also completely changes the context of their personalities. Like Timon and Pumbaa going around saying like don't worry about anything, just do what you want. When they're by themselves, it's just because they're kind of like free-spirited and fun. But when they're in this other like community that's separate from the rest of the world, it's just kind of nihilistic, because they're surrounded by people that care about them and that they interact with, and they obviously have a society, but they're still telling Simba like nothing matters, like life's not a circle, it's a line, just give up on anything. Like it's just super, like it's just like this weird kind of like vibe that comes from it, instead of it just being playful and carefree.
I can't agree with you more. And I know, again, I'm going to say this multiple times. We're going to talk about Timon and Pumbaa a little bit later, but there was multiple lines that they brought up that completely changed the character of Timon and mainly Pumbaa, because they switched. And I think the one thing I'll say for right now, they switched the fact that instead of talking about Pumbaa's weight and how he's being sort of victimized and being called fat and being called a pig, to now in this 2019 version, Pumbaa stands up and fight for bullies because bullies are bad. It doesn't matter what species they are. And I think that's two very different things to be sort of talking about. Of 2019, Pumbaa was completely fine with farting and being called fat, and it was like, oh, that's okay. Whereas in the 94 version, it was definitely a no-no, and that's what sort of triggered him off and to kind of go fight all the hyenas. So there was a lot of character changes that happened with it, and so I'm glad that you brought that up here, Mocha, because I didn't like it, but I can understand why other people may appreciate it.
They kind of like lived in a Midsummer-like cult where everyone was happy, and everyone's happy, and it was super cultish.
I have no idea what that movie was because I haven't seen it, so thanks for spoiling it.
Yeah. I'm not going to give you shit about spoiling it, but I haven't seen it.
I like the changes. I was reading the about, I guess let's talk about Timon and Pumbaa, because I think technically we're supposed to be talking about the characters rather than the technical aspects, but whatever. So for me, I liked them. Apparently in the original, I was reading an interview with what's his face and the other guy, Billy Eichner and the
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, I was like, he's the more famous person, and I can't remember his name. They said that they really got the impression that they had a theatrical way to them in the first movie, and that they wanted to go more as like a conversational, you know, flip the how the characters are played. And I think that was a smart decision. Favreau definitely tried to, like, I think the goal was to scale it down and make it a little bit more like relatable rather than an over the top type thing. And they did the same thing with the hyenas. Like instead of making the hyenas just dumb idiot lackeys, they made them a little bit more serious and they failed not because they're idiots, but because they weren't good enough, you know, which I think they kind of ruined, because if you have Keegan-Michael Key,
you got
yeah, it.
It
is. Oh my God. I'm Blewett.exe is just failing all over the place right now. And Eric Andre, and like those two guys are very funny individuals, and the fact that they didn't have me dying laughing every single time they were on screen was like a distinct choice by the director to make them more serious. I will say that Florence Kasumba was perfectly cast in that role because she nailed the whole like serious, but our species is just not good enough to overcome it. I actually did like the decision they made in that aspect, but
I did like how the hyenas were a bit more vicious in tone, because it makes them feel more like a threat to the lions. And whereas in the first Lion King, I never really felt that threat, even though they drew them to be like really vicious near the end, especially that last battle. It's just because of the tomfoolery and like them doing things like Mufasa, and things like that. Just like kind of made them just cornballs walking around rather than vicious soldiers that could.
So like, I didn't
get a lion if they wanted to.
I didn't hate the fact that they changed the characterization. I actually liked that, and I felt it was a little bit more relatable, because you're right. You know, it made it seem like they weren't just idiots, you know. I just didn't like the casting, because I love those actors as comedic actors, and they weren't comedic characters, right? I think that those actors could have done a lot more with the original kind of archetype of those characters, and they probably should have gone someone else for the new version.
Especially because you can't see their face. Like, you only have a voice that you're going off of, and we know now, especially with Keegan-Michael Key's voice, being in Toy Story 4, which is a hilarious character that he plays in there, so we know that how iconic his voice is, even if you don't know, because not a lot of people is going to know Eric Andre. He's very, very different type of... I guess I'll say a different style of comedy, but not as definitely a lesser known. But it's weird that you are giving us this more serious hyena, more vicious hyena, and you're putting in the voice that is right now known for over the top comedic lines and one liners. I think it's kind of strange, because it felt like in this movie they had the same complex as Hercules. I don't know if you guys remember those two little demons that's in there. And the same thing that ended up happening was, oh, hey, wait, let's not tell him or her, right, that he died. Just tell him that he died and it will be fine. And the same thing comes back in the end. So I was like, that was really strange. I don't know why they ended up putting that in this movie, because it wasn't there before. But I thought it was weird.
I do agree with Blewett in the sense of enjoying what they did with the hyenas in this movie. One, first of all, having Florence Kasumba play Shenzi. I love Florence Kasumba. I'm so glad that she got this role, because she is somebody who has such a presence physically when she's on screen. For those who don't recognize the name, she you may remember her from Black Panther. She played Ayo, who was one of the Dora Milaje. She's the one who in Captain America: Civil War goes up to Scarlet Witch and says, "Move or be moved." And she has such a great presence with doing so little in that role. And she managed to bring all of that through her voice for Shenzi. Shenzi was super intimidating. I believed that character having a strong sense of pride, despite being also intelligent enough to know that she can't handle a one-on-one fight with Mufasa or a direct attack on the pride. But I feel like she did a great job with this role. And I also really liked how, of all the personifications of humanity within different animals in this movie, the smiling from the hyenas, I thought, was super impactful. Like, it was very, very creepy the first time they smiled on screen, and they just like pulled back their lips. But instead of doing it like in a snarl, like the lions do, they just came back, and their lips came back in this kind of super creepy, super, super intimidating smile that I thought was really unsettling. And it definitely added to the intensity of that first scene where they were chasing Simba and Nala around through the elephant graveyard.
Yeah, I know that we talked a lot about, you know, Timon, Pumbaa. We talked about the hyenas. Megan, I know that you were saying that these are some of like your favorite characters. I know also some of the reviews that I wasn't necessarily reading were people just didn't like sort of it, not only the new casting, but people didn't like sort of some of these new characters sort of vibe. So what is your take?
I really liked it. And part of it might be that I don't remember the original as much as I would like to. But Shenzi was one of my favorite characters. Like, just like Mocha was saying, she brought all of her personality in there through her voice. I didn't know who the cast was going into it, but the second I heard her, I knew who it was. And I like that they kind of changed the hyenas, and they were just kind of these dumb animals that were running around in the first one. And this time it felt like they had a little bit more oomph behind them. And like you were saying, the scene where they said, oh yeah, he died. Da, da, da. What was the point of that? I think it was trying to show you a more humane side of them, that, and maybe it was that they were fearful as well. They weren't willing to go down in the ruckus of what was going on to prove that he was dead. They wanted to kind of take the lazy route, but they also maybe didn't want to see him dead. I don't know. Well, but I didn't hate that scene as much as maybe you did. But overall, I really liked the hyenas and the change in that. Timon and Pumbaa were my favorite. They were probably my favorite in the original as well. I love a good comedic relief. And with such a dark film, you kind of have to have that. And I think that they bring the light into the movie. And I wish that they could have done more. And just like you guys were saying, it's weird to see them as real animals and see their livelihood and their eating bugs, and seeing them as actual animals really drives the fear of being eaten by a lion that you don't feel in the original. And it adds, I think, to their character that they're terrified that they're going to be eaten and they're still friends with Simba.
Yeah. I would just say that I think, at least my interpretation of them, the reason why they decided not to follow Simba down the mountainside, aside from just showing that those two characters were kind of cowardly and lazy, I think was also just kind of running with the theme that the hyenas as a whole are very short-sighted in terms of their planning. This ties into how Mufasa or Scar was calling them out for saying, you know, you have all this land for yourself and somehow you've managed to eat everything and not leave anything for the future. Like you're screwing yourselves. And I feel like that was a similar, just like a running theme with their characters. Like they only kind of look at what's immediately in front of them. The same thing for when they kill Scar, you know, like Scar definitely had it coming, but for them in that moment, they think, okay, Scar talked shit about us. We're going to kill him. Not thinking, okay, well, they're like Mufasa's son came back. So it's going to create a bad environment for us now. We may as well keep an eye on
someone on our side. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. They were very short-sighted, I think. And I think that ties into it.
And I like that character development way more than I like the dumb hyenas who are just there kind of cackling around, personally.
Yeah. I mean, there's some interesting voice takes in this movie and voice choices, but I would say like some of the ones I really loved a lot. I mean, you can't go wrong with James Earl Jones. Him as Mufasa in the original was fantastic. And I love that he changes Mufasa up a little bit in this one. So we still get that great James Earl Jones voice, but also we get to see Mufasa be more like, you get to see some more fatherly things from him, which I think is cool. There's a scene between him and Sarabi where Simba wakes up, is like, Dad, let's go. And Sarabi's like, your son wants you. And Mufasa's just like, before the sun rises, he's your son. And I love that like kind of family dynamic they have. And it starts with like seeing James Earl Jones or Mufasa as Mufasa the father more in this movie rather than Mufasa the king, which I thought actually played a lot differently than the first film. Also loved Afri Woodard as Sarabi. I thought she was fantastic as being that mother lion that has to care for the pride when the king is not there and still standing strong as that leader. She had some really great moments, whether it's with Mufasa and just kind of reasoning with him or standing against Scar. That was a fantastic moment for her. And I love John Connie as Rafiki. Give it up to T'Chaka for giving a great job for Rafiki. I wish there was just more to Rafiki. There's a lot of Rafiki that was cut out, which makes that character such an interesting, wise character in the first film. And we really don't get much of that except for his mannerisms, actions. He's chilling in a tree for most of the time. And he's just waiting for like the king to be king again. And he was such more interesting character in the first film that I feel like they didn't do John Connie justice in that role.
Yeah. I was glad that he got to whip some butt with his staff though.
Yeah.
I love the fact when he was swinging the staff around, although I really thoroughly enjoy when Rafiki pulls the Bruce Lee move.
Yeah.
The original movie, and everybody loves that because yes, that's like super, that's what he was trying to go off of. In this movie, they made it very like ultra realistic of Rafiki swinging the actual club around as if one would swing a club around. It was kind of lower. It was more, I guess, human. I thought that was actually pretty cool.
Did they have such a drawn out battle at the end of the original Lion King?
It wasn't as long, but they also did it in a couple different like areas. And so
there wasn't as many hyenas.
Yeah, there was only three of them, right?
This was like one big battle sequence in like one large area, I think. Whereas in the original, the cage where Scar was at and, you know, Zazu was in there and Timon ran in there, they kind of broke it up so that it didn't seem all in one.
Yeah, that was like a detriment to me because when that whole thing started and the two sides charged at each other, all I could think of was like, oh, here's the big Disney battle sequence ending that all of these movies, you know, have. And it's like, why? Why did we, for such a Adventures personal movie,
assemble.
They even had like, they had Nala jump over like a sliding Simba. Like they did like an actual like human action sequence. I was like, dude, am I watching Lion King or the Avengers? You know, like I that took me out of it. And that was definitely a Disney thing.
Yeah, I will say that
Simba picked up Mjolnir. Is that what took you out?
Yeah. Oh man, I would have loved to see Rafiki be worthy. But no, yeah, that was like, this is a super random detail, but like talking about like changes that they made that I don't necessarily understand. In the opening scene where they're doing the presentation of Simba, in the original movie, Rafiki walks up to the baby Simba and takes a melon. Like one of those same melons that we see over and over and over in the trees, like he's hanging in throughout the entire movie, and he breaks it and like the juice goes flying and glints in the sun. And he takes that like juicy stuff and rubs it on his forehead. And I just remember that being like a really like beautiful, like beautifully animated scene while I'm like thinking it was cool when I was a kid. And in this one, he takes like the roots, like the dusty roots, and like breaks those. And there isn't anything wrong with it. Like I'm not upset by it by any means, but I just don't know why they went out of their way to change that one specific detail. I don't get it. I don't know.
I feel like that's a reoccurring thing with what we've been talking about, right? Like maybe some of us hate them more than others, but there are these changes and it's just like, why? Why did you change those things? Why did you take that end battle scene and make it this huge extravagant thing? Why did we have, what was it that was like, the hair scene. Like, why do we have that scene?
Yeah.
What, like, is it just because you want to show off this certain animation or what if the cracking of the roots and the kind of dust coming off of it was something that they wanted to do in the movie? I don't know, but it kind of ties into these remakes and what we're doing. But I don't know that we're going to get an answer of why, but yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, and maybe the roots were like red ochre or saffron and it's more accurate to the region. Who knows?
It's even more confounding, these sort of like changes they make too, because like John Favreau made these small changes, but where he kept the movie the same, it was almost shot for shot.
Right.
And, like there was like so much of the movie had no changes whatsoever. And I feel like this movie could have benefited from having a lot of changes, like keep the story the same, but just do a lot more with what you can do with the technology and the room that you have for it being an extra hour longer than it was the original, you know?
It's a good, you know, you can compare this to, you know, a movie like Aladdin, where they put huge changes. I mean, absolute huge changes that plots are, the entire plot was almost rewritten. Characters were completely changed. I'm like, I'm okay with this because now you're coming, at least you're making this new film in 2019 that you're trying to sort of build upon all the things that we have to put in movies now. Like, if you're not going to do it shot for shot and make everything the same, change it entirely. Still keep the same sort of spirit and the soul of the movie, or at least try to, but you have to change it up. I don't know. And it feels like it was either a John Favreau or somebody else was like kind of going back and forth with some of these things. Because even that your point you were talking, Megan, if it's at the end of the day, if we're not understanding and we're not sure why you changed this and that, then
that what's the point?
Yeah. And the message that they were trying to convey didn't go well. And so it's going to leave us a little confused and say, well, I'm not sure why you did this. Is it because of what happened in 2019? This and something in Africa, was it has something to do with that gourd, but then you still showed it. So it's very strange that anytime they have a remake, and we could talk about this, even the Jungle Book comes up. Anytime that you have a remake, why are you choosing to keep certain things the same, especially the songs in Jungle Book, you know, are similar, and other ones you're just like, no, we're not going to do that anymore. I don't get it.
Well, yeah. This is more towards like the next section, which we've, I don't know, kind of been bouncing around between these things. But could I just quickly remark, this is more definitely towards like the overall thoughts on Disney remakes, but a good jumping off point. These remakes are absolutely pointless. Like 20 years from now, when our generation is having, you know, kids that are old enough to be, I guess, 20 years old, I guess we're all at the childbearing ages. Weird thing to say. We're going to scrap that and just randomly drop into the next
part.
We're
all fertile.
Yeah, you know. So, but you know, like a decade from now, whenever people are old enough to start watching these movies, like, what are you going to show your kids? You're going to show them the 94.
And then the animated one.
Why would you even bother? There's so many movies out there. Like, why would you waste your Saturday night showing your kids this one when you could just watch another movie with them that has more importance? Like, it's just, it's cool. You know, the CG is cool. It's a step forward in that. But, like, if you're doing the same movie with no significant, like, overall structure changes, why? Why are you telling this story? A good example that I could say that did it well was last year's A Star is Born, where they took a similar narrative structure, changed all the characters, changed their backstories, and then just kept the same arc. And that's what made it a remake. Go ahead,
Warren. But I would say, going off your one, none of us are parents here, right? And so the one thing that I wanted to make sure and really try to grasp is, as a parent, either a young parent or an old parent, as a parent for other years, I was then going out and asking my friends, my mom, you know, my girlfriend's mother, what movie would you end up viewing and seeing? And my mom would probably said she shows this over the cartoon version because this is more of a, although there's differences and I get it, but if you're talking about showing something first, this is more of a representation of what's kind of happening for right now of people being bullied, not being body shamed at all. Feel free to fart as long as you want. People are going to have different ways that they want to live life, whether it's away from a society that's a monarchy and just by themselves, like a hedonistic view or not. I think these are the things that, and what I was saying is kind of an opinion, just like it's my opinion here. I agree with you, Bullet. I love the 94 version much better than 2019. But parents may have a different sort of scenario, right? Like the cartoon version was definitely a bit more detached from real life. It's a cartoon, it's fantasy, it's fake. Whereas this one here does kind of drive home, at least for me, how hyenas can be scary. Animals can be scary. These are things that I don't think the original movie kind of got the chance to see. So I would say I would show them both and just be honest with them of they're going to have two different tellings.
I would definitely show them the original one because at least that doesn't have Beyonce in it.
I will always go down and defend just about everything that Beyonce does. I don't really listen to her music a lot, but she's amazing. And her singing was hilariously good, so much so that she overshadowed Donald Glover, which we all knew was going to happen. Yeah. But
did she sing Circle, the Circle Life opening? Or was that someone else?
No, that was some.
It was someone else, I believe.
But okay, because Love Tonight was like clearly it's a bummer because if you watch YouTube videos, Donald Glover can hit those higher notes and get on close to get to the Beyonce level. But it was hilarious. It was like, okay, we're just going to have Beyonce just do her thing and Donald Glover just support her and just go through it. But clearly you're not going to overshadow her in the song, which was a bummer. And I agree with you, Megan, that the fact that they cut it super short. And like you said, you know, and looking at your notes, the biggest and the most beautiful thing about musicals, especially for me, which I love musicals, is that we get so much exposition and story and character development and work through a musical, especially seeing it on screen. And if you shorten that, we almost kind of feel a little robbed that we've been waiting all this time to have a 10-minute song for just Beyonce and Childish Gambino that you shorten it down to under two. So I think that's kind of a bummer, especially when you put moments of hair flying in the wind for longer. So that's the only kind of
issue. Yeah, the fact that we got the journey of the hair clump instead of a song is really disappointing.
Even if someone had sang while that was happening, I would be okay with it. Because at least we would have gotten another song. Well, and you have gone around telling everyone who was going to be in this movie for like a year and a half or whatever. And so I'm going into it pumped, excited for the music. And it was kind of a letdown.
Even if you do like a side-by-side comparison or a shot-for-shot of, it'll be a nice kind of juxtapose of they're singing Hakuna Matata, No Worries, where this hair is traveling back to the biggest responsibility and now Simba's life that he's chose to run away from and goes back to Rafiki of, oh, this is something that we have to still resolve. They could have done something a little bit more or just completely cut that out and give Rafiki some more to do. In any case, it was kind of fucked up they didn't do anything for Rafiki. But I did enjoy Zazu. Although the only reason why I enjoyed Zazu's character is because he was simply being his own talk show self.
Yeah, and that's like
Oliver was great, and he was almost an audience character in some areas, and they had a lot of kind of fourth breaking wall.
It's an exposition bird.
Yeah, well, I mean, even exposition, but he was an audience audience surrogate character on the screen, like saying out loud what we're sort of thinking. I'm like, oh, okay, I think that's kind of funny. And just kind of commenting on what's happening in their environment. I thought that was funny, but also John Oliver would just be a John Oliver. He didn't do an accent. He was literally just talking by himself. So,
I would have loved it if John Oliver did the Southern accent.
What's up?
Huh?
What was that?
Nothing.
Oh, if John Oliver did a Southern accent, that'd be hilarious.
That would be
terrible. Or he'd just brutalize it. But I mean, another voice that was actually really good was Chiwetel Ejiofor. I mean, as Scar. Like,
good job. Holy shit.
He definitely did. I've been a fan of Chiwetel's for many, many years. So.
Well, Mike, I could never say his name. Sorry.
I thought his voice acting for Scar was incredible, even if people have reservations about the song that they missed. I believed him a lot more than Jeremy Irons as Mufasa's brother. Like, he had this kind of pained tone to his voice the whole time about being the brother that was overlooked or the brother that's just incredibly jealous that Mufasa gets his pride and everything and is the king of the all the lands that the sun shines on and everything like that. And he has to live in this little cave at the top of Pride Rock. Why? We don't know. But it doesn't really matter.
Something tells me he chose to live in that cave because Mufasa wanted him to have his brother around. He was just being a sulky little bitch.
Yeah. Scar is, I guess he's a bit of an incel or something like that.
It's kind of a bummer, though. I kind of was wishing and hoping that. I was hoping that he had a voice more from Doctor Strange. He almost played not a same but very similar overlook. Feels like he deserves more character. And he had more of like a lower, more of like a pressing matter, especially in Strange, especially spoiler for Doctor Strange, during his sort of turn at the end. I felt like that was way more of a serious character voice than I thought that was going to be in Scar, but it felt like he was also playing a rendition of Jeremy Irons and not quite going into like the actual voice that we know that he can do. So that's my only sort of tidbit about him.
Yeah, and I kind of like that it was a muted take on what Jeremy Irons did. And Jeremy Irons, yeah, definitely a theater actor before a movie actor, and can definitely bring a lot of gusto and overacting when it's necessary. But I like this understated performance by Chiwetel. I thought it was fantastic.
So I know we talked a lot about characters. We talked a lot about acting. We also talked about lots of differences. So I do want to kind of change gears just a little bit. And I know Brylan kind of mentioned this particular question of, I'd love to get, you know, some hot takes on overall thoughts on sort of Disney remakes. And what do we think makes a good Disney remake? And then I also would love to hear what is a good Disney remake. Not animated to animated, but animated to, if we're calling it live action, sure. But what's a good live remake that you can look back and says, you know what, that was pretty good. So, Brylan, what you got for me?
Yeah, so when it comes to this whole plan and initiative that Disney has when it comes to remaking these films, I find, like, so far the ones I've seen Dumbo, I've seen this one, and I've seen parts of Beauty and the Beast, and I think this might be the strongest one I've seen.
But hold on. Brylan. You said you only seen this and Dumbo.
It's not like there's 1,000 of them.
There is like 1,000 of them.
There's like six right now.
There's
like,
six.
I think
legit, so I'm batting like a third.
Eight. I think they're like 8 to 10 right now.
Name them, Warren.
It starts with Cinderella and then goes after that.
No, Cinderella was not... Wait, okay, hold on.
No, for this current run, I'm talking about this new plan they have to revision their old stuff in a live action form. It starts with Cinderella. That was their first one.
I'm not talking about
like, oh, let me go find this obscure redoing that they did a long time ago.
I'm going to count, but continue your thought.
Okay. So I think for the most part, this remake initiative could benefit more the older Disney films than any what I would consider the modern Disney films, which are the films that I grew up with when it comes to Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Little Mermaid, Mulan, those films. I really don't think they've just haven't been around long enough to warrant remaking them. And that's just a true, honest thing about, like, we need time to actually have them be fit. Feel like classics, and they're getting to that point, but I don't think they're classics just yet. But what I'm interested to see is, I am probably most interested to see the Cinderella remake because I've heard good things about it. But I also want to see, like, how do you take a story from the 20s or 30s and bring it into modern times? I saw Dumbo. I thought that was going to be like the perfect recipe, and unfortunately it was not. But I mean, I think about, like, what if they did a quote-unquote live-action remake of Robin Hood? I think that would be awesome. I would love to see that with animals actually playing out the Robin Hood story.
Okay.
And not
sounds like okay.
No Taron Egerton BS Robin Hood story movie.
Okay.
Or Snow White. I hear there's a Snow White in the works. Wow. So I'm really curious about that. What would the dwarves look like? And my personal Disney favorite, Rescuers. I'd love to see how they could do a live action modern retelling of the Rescuers.
Okay. Can I interject for 2 seconds here?
Yeah.
So we have Aladdin, Dumbo, Lion King, Christopher Robin.
That's not a remake.
Okay. Okay. So it technically is, but whatever.
No, literally not a remake.
Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast.
Yep.
Pete's Dragon. Is definitely a remake, my friend.
No.
Yes, it is. And I'm going to send you the cartoon version. Neither is good.
So when did Pete's Dragon come out?
The first one?
No, this remake.
The original, yeah, the remake came out in 2016.
Was it on TV only movie or something?
No, I went to the theater and watched it, and it was terrible.
Oh, gosh.
Car crashed. It was really fucked up. So, yeah, that's a remake, my friend. But that's okay. Anyway, I'm already up.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah. So, Cinderella, number 7. They have Maleficent, but I'm not counting that.
No, nah, I wouldn't count that.
They have Alice in Wonderland.
I don't know
if we can count that either.
I've always heard it starts with Cinderella.
101 Dalmatians. You got to count that.
No.
What?
I don't
care. When did that come out?
That came out like the
90s. Like the 90s, yeah. Like late 90s. It was a long time ago.
Okay.
I'm just talking about this current, like, they sat down and said, we're going to start producing our old movies and follow this formula.
I mean,
I heard that starts with Cinderella.
The 101 Dalmatian one, though, is a live-action remake of the cartoon movie.
It is. And I heard, like, Glenn Close is good as Cruella de Vil.
I just said that. So I think right there, that's...
But it sounds so much better when Mocha says it.
Oh, okay. There's 9 films right there that I just had talked about. Of like, out of the 9 films, Brylin, you say that you saw 2, and the 2 that you saw is this year.
Garbage.
Also. And there's 3 of them that came out this year alone. So I don't know, man, if you have a good enough sample size, but I'm just basically saying is Dumbo was terrible. And I really don't want that to be on your list of the movie that you actually.
No, I'm not saying that that was a good execution of it. Not at all. I'm saying that the movies that could benefit most are the older fare.
For sure.
The only one I would make an exception for is Fantasia. No one should ever touch Fantasia. It's a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Anything else is fair game.
I think if you redo the Sword of the Stone, you got to get an Ian McKellen as Merlin.
He doesn't. He doesn't have to be Merlin.
Mid-thousands, Haley Joel Osment as King Arthur. Oh,
get James McAvoy as Merlin.
Oh, that doesn't make any sense. What? Get out of here. Okay. What else you got, Brylin?
Other than that, I mean, like, the thing that makes a remake better is that they still take chances. And this is the problem with this Lion King remake is I don't feel like they took enough chances to either modernize the tale or add more to the tale to keep us interested in what the story was. It was literally almost 98% of shot by shot remake of the original. Whereas you could have taken a character like Nala and expanded upon her story or shown her strong will and actually have like a very strong female character in that, in this movie for young girls and things. But also you could have had, if I look at another remake that happened this year, which is a video game, Resident Evil 2. Like the original Resident Evil 2 was one of the best horror games ever made, but they looked at it and they didn't really just up-res it and say, play the same game again. They actually found ways of tightening up the story, making the story make more sense, adding different plot twists to the story to drive you to actually play the game again and also make the controls better so they fit more modern play styles as well. And they kind of actually took their time and care with it. Whether this, I always heard a lot of good things about the Jungle Book remake. So I'm interested to check it out that Favreau did a great job of actually telling that differently. You look like Warren that you are not in that, that group that liked the new Jungle Book, but, I feel like they basically told Jon Favreau to say, hey, make the Lion King. He's like, literally or figuratively? And he chose literally. And unfortunately, it doesn't help it be as powerful a moment in movies as the original Lion King was. Even though I feel like original Lion King, visually stunning, solid story. Not really exceptional story. And for this movie, it's pretty much the same thing. Visually stunning, somewhat solid story, but not as solid as the original.
Mocha, what you got?
For Disney stuff? Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to make it very, very clear to everyone listening at home that I have not had any interest whatsoever in any of the Disney remakes that have come out. Not because I'm anti-Disney movies. I love all these movies, but I've just never been excited by the idea of live action remakes. And Lion King did not help with that in any way.
Sorry, are we counting Peter Pan as a Disney live action remake?
No, because they're remaking it.
They're remaking the remake?
It's all the slate. Yeah.
But they still remade it once.
Remaking it again.
Yeah, but that still counts as a remake. What?
Who knows?
It was a remake. It'll be a double remake at some point.
Okay, so
Peter, I can't wait till Pinocchio.
Number 11, by the way. So there's 11 Disney live action remakes.
I told you there were 12 of them. Anyway, this movie felt masturbatory. This movie felt like it was porn for Disney fanatics and nothing else. I'm sure all of us know one or two people who are just way, way, way too into Disney stuff, which is God bless them. But this is who that movie was for. No one else really. And I feel like that's kind of rude to me as a non-obsessed consumer of Disney products. I personally think that they shouldn't remake the animal-based Disney movies. It's not exciting for me to see a personified, joyfully drawn animal cartoon become just a photorealistic actual animal that just kind of flaps its jowls. I'm definitely excited though for the more human-based Disney movies that are being remade. Mulan, I am super stoked for, and that trailer got me even more pumped. Why? Because it's about people fighting in a war. I'm into that being suddenly done with actual people. I'd probably be into Disney's Hercules being remade. I could see that being a really cool remake. Jungle Book, I wasn't interested in. Lion King, I'm not interested in. 101 Dalmatians, I probably wouldn't be interested in. But I would argue that this is also animal-based. Ariel is not a human. There's only three humans in the whole movie. So
that's true. Yeah. I was just curious because there are a lot of humans in that world. So I was curious to see, is that animal-based or not?
I would argue animal-based, and I'm not excited for the remake. I hope it's good. I don't wish Disney any ill will in this regard. I just it's not for me.
And would you say, do you have a best sort of Disney live action remake, or have you only seen a small sample size that you can't?
Megan. My sample size is fairly small and I don't like any of it. So I can't say I do.
Yeah.
I don't really have an opinion in that regard.
I'm sorry. I wasn't proposing. Megan, what about you? What are your thoughts on Disney live action remakes, and what's your sort of best example that you've seen so far?
For a quick hot take, I'm not a fan of Lion King, the story in general. Ooh. Not a fan of Hamlet, Macbeth, sorry. No, Hamlet.
You're right. I'm just sure it's Hamlet. You're wrong, but
that's what it's based on.
Right? Lion King was in the same group as Dumbo for me, kind of like Mocha, in the sense that I wasn't that interested in seeing it. I'm glad I saw it. I liked it a lot more than I liked Dumbo.
Thank you.
I think that in general, if you're going to retell the same story, do something different. Or do shot for shot and make it 1,000 times better. But if you're not going to be able to make that significantly better, then make it more worthwhile for the current climate.
What do you mean by do it shot for shot, but make it better? If they do it shot for shot, you mean the graphics and the voice acting?
Yeah. Yeah. If it was kind of a grainy or old animation.
Oh, okay.
If you have some sort of new technology that can make it so much better, then cool, redo it. Right. Yeah. But if you are going to kind of half-ass it and do some of the same story and some new stuff, it doesn't really fit. You kind of need to go one way or the other. And I think that when you were kind of talking about the different classes and if they're kind of taking that take of a monarchy, or if you want to be on the outskirts, or some sort of look at the animal kingdom as a society, they could have done it better. Hmm. I mean, look at Zootopia, right? Animated film, kids film. They are such a fantastic story. And it's a similar idea of a society and different class situations. But they didn't go hard enough to do that, right? Like, I think they could have taken this Lion King and made it worthwhile if they had gone more that direction.
Yeah. And Megan says Lion King needs to go harder in the paint. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Basketball reference, Mocha.
It's a Waka Flocka Flame reference.
That's not a walk. Get out of here, Blue. We're not.
It's a Shaq reference.
It's a Bob Ross reference. Okay.
So does that mean
harder in the paint?
Rylan, would you have liked it if Waka Flocka Flame played Nala?
No.
Instead of Beyonce?
No.
Let Megan continue, goddammit.
I think that there were a couple live action remakes of Disney that were better than this. By far my favorite will always be Beauty and the Beast, because I love that story. I love what they did with it. They did a similar thing where they kind of only revamped part of it, but I liked the take that they took on it. I liked the people they casted in it. And Aladdin. I really, really enjoyed Aladdin. And I think part of that is because both of those films were some of my favorite Disney films growing up. But Aladdin, if you guys haven't seen it, I really would strongly suggest it. Mocha, especially you, if all you've seen are these dumb animal live action ones, go see Aladdin. I don't think it was better than Beauty and the Beast for me, but it's pretty close up there. I wasn't a huge fan of the Cinderella retelling. I thought it was visually very pretty, but I didn't really like the story. So that would probably be my list of Disney retellings that I've actually seen. I don't know that I've seen the other ones. Definitely not.
Didn't see Pete's Dragon?
Yeah. Weird. No, that one wasn't on my list.
Damn, was that the only one that saw that in
theaters? You must have been literally the only person that bought a ticket to that movie.
Yeah, man. I probably
you had the free movie pass at the time, and you were just trying to get your.
I think that was my
ISG, points.
That was probably my ISGT days. So yeah, I was going to make it. All right, Blue, what you got for the hot takes, and also talks about what makes a good remake and your favorite Disney live action remake.
For my take on remakes, just rewind about a half hour and we'll get that. As far as what makes a good remake, rewind about 20 minutes and you'll get that. And then as far as my favorite fast forward into the future, eventually they'll have one that I'll like.
Damn.
None of them? No, I mean, I've only seen a couple of them. I heard Cinderella was like solid, though everyone's shaking their head at me. Ones that I've seen have all been like, why are you doing this? I will say this, at least they didn't auto-tune the Lion King actors and actresses as much as they did Beauty and the Beast, because that was insufferable to sit through. And at least there was like some pitch drift. I mean, I'm sure they tuned them, but not to the...
Just auto-tune and Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah. Emma Watson is...
T-Pain plays T-Pain. The Beast.
Huh? Oh, no way.
It's like a reverse Scarlett Johansson, where T-Pain actually played Emma Watson playing Belle.
Wow.
So many tangents.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll go, and I'll give a couple hot takes. So I guess I wouldn't consider myself a Disney fanatic. I hate going to Disney World, because I think that's weird. And thank you for Mocha for bringing that up. I'm not going to continue to kind of beat that. But I've seen I've seen every Disney live action remake. And even the ones that were not really included, I know some of us have seen. The only one on this list that I'm looking at that I haven't seen was Maleficent.
Not a remake.
But also not for me.
Because they're making a Sleeping Beauty movie.
No, You should watch Maleficent. I really enjoyed it, and they're coming out with the second one. I would strongly suggest that one.
A second one?
Yeah, yeah. Which you would think, what on earth could they be doing in a second Maleficent, which is not even its own story on its own? Watch it.
But it was also, I got super into it in Kingdom Hearts, and she was a great character in that video game. So I'm like, I wish that they had more presence for her in the movies besides really one. So it's cool to see.
I saw the trailer for the second Maleficent movie today, and I'm like, how is this a kid's movie?
Yeah. Oh, it's creepy. It's great. Angelina Jolie plays the part perfectly. And it's like Wicked to The Wizard of Oz. You know what I mean? Where it's giving you the backstory of the villain.
Okay, I'm all about that. I'll probably watch it sometime this weekend. So I've seen every Disney live action remake. And so I think I have to definitely kind of agree with you. Megan, Aladdin, Lion King, Beauty and Beast is definitely like there's a huge gap in between those three films and all the other ones that have been created. Jungle Book just simply was kind of strange because it was a little kid just being on green screen the entire time and it was super obvious. All the other ones just felt a little bit strange of why they even kind of made it. Mocha, I'm curious. My favorite Disney film animated is Goofy Movie. They're technically dogs, but it's not animal-based because they're trying to be people. Would you watch something like that?
That'd be horrifying.
There's no way in the world
a live-action version
that I want to see a live-action photorealistic Goofy. Oh, my God. No, that is haunting.
Oh, what if it was Benedict Cumberbatch playing Goofy?
What? Shut up. No, get out of here. No, don't ruin my joke. Don't ruin my it's
worse.
I think I agree with everything kind of talk about. I think the one thing I'm curious is to see is what are they going to continue to do with Mulan up here? And I think Mulan was by far one of my favorite Disney movies, especially because it was a female-led movie that talked about war, which really never happened at all. And so it was Mistaken Identity, another sort of Shakespeare reference, but not too much into that, but also had some phenomenal music from Christina Aguilera. And then also we mentioned Hercules was one of my favorite movies as well, because it was the biggest sort of fantasy sort of movie that I've seen so far, but also phenomenal music. So I'm curious to see if they're going to continue to just remake all of them. Or they're just going to sort of kind of pick and choose. I'm excited for the future. I'm going to watch probably every Disney live action remake. I'm definitely going to be a fan about it. But I really hope they just kind of learn from what they've been doing so far. I think they have, at least because this year, I think we've gotten at least two. In this year, we got two of the better ones so far with Lion King for me and Aladdin. And last year, we got Beauty and the Beast. So I think that's at least trending in the right direction. Yeah, we're not counting Dumbo, but the first Dumbo was also super racist. So I guess that's a step in the right direction to not be racist this time. So there you go. But I think they actually hopefully are going to get some more information. I enjoy Jon Favreau. I know we didn't talk too much about Hans Zimmer. And I think as I listen to this score, I think the music is a huge element, which is it feels like it's a make or break for Disney remakes. And some of these films that I'm looking at, like I know I didn't really have any issue with the auto tune, but Lion King had some okay music. That's why it's kind of sort of up there, number three. Beauty and the Beast had good music, and Aladdin had good music, which really makes the original film magical. That's why people are going back and singing all of these songs. And spoiler alert for people who hadn't seen Aladdin, but the I Can Show You the World song was really, really done, I thought. And they actually showed us the world.
That was awesome.
Surprise, yeah. And so they ended up kind of changing it, much like, you know, you were saying, Megan. They changed it and they showed us something different, but they still kept the soul of the music that it baffles me if you're making a live action don't put music into the movie. It's crazy. So that's probably going to be like my biggest sort of take of allow these amazing artists that we have. First of all, I didn't even realize Chance the Rapper was in this Lion King until I just looked at the IMDb.
So yeah, it was the little tootie thing.
He was Bush Baby.
I didn't even notice. But it's, you know, allow these amazing artists. I feel like we have come so far and have amazing people who can sing and do tons of stuff. And we should be able to at least do these original songs justice by attempt to do them better and maybe draw it out a little bit. The fact that they're not really doubling down. Also, the fact that they released the soundtrack before the movie came out, and the Lion King song is longer on the actual Spotify playlist than it is in the movie. I'm like, that's not the best way you want to do that. So I think really kind of doubling down on the music is going to be best, which makes a good remake. And my best one is going to be Aladdin. So I think that was by far the most enjoyable.
Interesting.
So let's move into our final and lasting thoughts. Would you recommend this movie? If you wouldn't recommend this movie, and I think we already kind of know, what other movie would you watch? It's either 2019 or 94. So I'll ask Megan you first, 2019, 94. If neither one of those movies, what's another movie right now in theaters you'll tell people to go check out? Megan?
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Sorry.
I would probably be more inclined to say the 94.
Okay.
And I can't really remember what else I've seen in theaters other than Spider-Man, which I would recommend, but.
Fair. Enjoy it. Yeah. Mocha, what you got? 94, 2019, or another movie in theaters right now?
You know, so first of all, let me just get it right out there in the open. 94, 100%. As for my lasting thoughts, listen, I'm not quite sure if my opinion here is legitimate or if I'm just being like a curmudgeon, but I have absolutely no interest in Disney's campaign to remake every one of its classic animated films in live action. For me, it's really frustrating to know that the likely insane budget and pool of talent that was used to, or that's being allocated towards movies like this to make like visually stunning, super detailed, shot for shot remakes, isn't being put towards developing new IPs, which is something that Disney used to be amazing at. You know, that being said, if the revenue from these movies goes into like funding new Disney Plus shows and new content for Star Wars and Marvel, then I'll make that Faustian bargain. But I mean, otherwise, I'm not excited about it.
I think that's a fair. Brylin, 94, 2019, or another movie out in theaters right now with your lasting thoughts?
I would say probably 94. I mean, I got some of the same feelings for this movie as I do the original movie, but I think the voice acting is just a little bit better in 94. But I'd say if you've never seen the Lion King movie before, it's not a bad one to go see. So enjoy it. If you don't find anything else in the movie theaters that interesting. And then as for another movie, you should go see, how about you give that Endgame one last little bit of
love. We've been pushing that for the last 7
weeks. Really? We did it.
Yeah, that was all our podcast. Our podcast we did basically it. Made
our
it the
podcast
most.
Is responsible for Avengers Endgame being the number one movie of all time.
You're welcome, the Russos.
Yeah. All right, Blew It, what you got? 94, 2019, or another movie in theaters right now, along with your lasting thought?
Absolutely 94, like 100%. This movie just like exists. I don't know. I'm sure they'll make it like a reanimated box set, and it's like someone will buy that just to have every, you know, Disney movie. But yeah, there's no real reason to watch this. Just watch the original.
Oh my god, you're right. In like 15 years, we're gonna get a 2D remake of the 3D remake of the Lion King.
Probably.
If it's cut out from like a National Geographic, I'd love it.
Well, at that point, they'll just be able to genetically engineer lions to actually talk, you know.
Oh, and then no, just they're going to cast Tom Cruise as Simba, and he will become a lion because that's what Tom Cruise does.
They're definitely going to cast Scarlett Johansson as Nala.
I'm scared to ask why.
Just look up Scarlett Johansson casting. There's a plethora of articles there.
Nah, I'm gonna stay away from that one. I think it's pretty easy for me. 94. I really wish the 2019 version was going to be better for my sort of lasting thoughts. And any other movie that's in theaters right now, so it looks like some slim pickings at this time. But Endgame is still in theaters. I would absolutely love for somebody to go out and watch. I got the hookup too. I saw it playing in theaters in AMC, and I was like, I'm not going to watch that, but I kind of need to know if that's actually good. Has anybody seen that original movie?
What are you talking about?
I Got the Hookup, Master P movie.
Oh, no. I thought you meant you had a hookup to a movie, but you didn't say the name of the movie.
I zoned out for like 10 seconds. I thought we were talking about Master Pain.
The movie I Got the Hookup to in theaters right now. I'm just curious if anybody has watched that.
I mean, there's an I Got the Hookup 1. Like, yes. Is it 2? Like, this? What is this film? Fantastic.
So I'm going to buy that movie for everybody here, and we're all going to watch it and review it this weekend. That'd be great. And with that, we have been the Down in Front Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining. I will start, and I want to give a special thank you to our very special guest, Miss Megan Arnold, who's going out on school nights now. I don't even know who she is anymore. Where can people find more of your work, and what else do you do on the internet besides take awesome photos and drink wine?
That's about all I do. Drink awesome wine and take photos of it. You can find me on Friends with Blends on Instagram, Facebook, Friends W Blends. Me, my pal Derek, and some guy Warren. We drink wine sometimes. That's it.
So rude. So rude. Brylan, where can people find more of your work on the interwebs?
You can find me recutting the trailer for the movie adaptation of the musical Cats with scenes from The Lion King to make it less nightmarish on Twitter at Brylan, BRILUND. You can also find me on Instagram, posting many movie and TV reviews at I Am Brylan. I haven't put any reviews up lately, but I definitely put up a lot of San Diego Comic-Con stuff. So Warren, stay off my Instagram unless you want to be spoilt.
Oh my gosh. I thoroughly appreciate you, Brylan, for texting me about the Blade spoilers that were splattered around everywhere. Couldn't even check my phone. People are texting.
I asked permission.
I appreciate you asking permission because I'm like, okay, if he knows this, I'm going to be spoiled if I just open up my phone. So thank you so much, Mahershala Ali. I'm super excited for that. But incidentally, I heard about all the nightmare production that came.
The nightmare fuel.
Yeah, from Blade Trinity and like Wesley Snipes and how terrible that film was. So
they CG'd his eyes open once because he refused to open his eyes.
How ridiculous is that? Oh my goodness. I'm super excited to see that and hear that. I follow that project. Mr. Mocha, the beautiful Mocha Mike, where can people find more of your work on the interweb?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, where I do voiceover work for the photorealistic pigeons in my neighborhood at Mocha Mike Li. Ask the line intended. Unfortunately, you cannot at Mocha Mike because the person who owns that username went on a safari and was slowly eaten to death by hyenas before he gave me the password. So until then, it's still Mocha Mike Li. You can also find me on Instagram, where I post my photography work at Mocha Mike. As well as on Medium, where rumor has it, I may one day start posting longer form reviews about the things we talk about here.
That's okay, you know. Good shout out about the line. Blew It, the Shredder, where can people find more of your work? What do you got coming up?
Hey, yeah, you can find us at My News Music or My News Band on most major platforms. Check it out. We'll have some music eventually. Also, you can find us online at jesseransharam.com. It is explicit. You know, most of the ones that try and sugarcoat it, but this one is you got to be 18 to sign up. But yeah, jesseransharem.com.
Check out more of our work at downinfrontpodcast.com, where you'll find our video teasers, our bios. We actually have our information from Friends with Blends and a lot of other kind of small partnerships that we're doing. So that's always going to be great. We're on Instagram. We're going to be on Facebook. We're going to be on Twitter. So literally just about anywhere and everywhere, just check out downinfrontpodcast.com. Our music is actually going to be done by the beautiful Bluet. Wow, I was going to say the beautiful Mocha, but that's not correct. So check out our SoundCloud. That's going to be on there. We're going to be on Reddit. If you like what we do, you want to sign up to support us, patreon.com/downinfrontpodcast. Anything and everything is amazing. We are still aggressively trying to get sponsored by Arizona Iced Tea. Pretty sure they sent me a cease and desist letter, but I moved, so I never actually got it, so I'm okay. Brylan, what is our next review?
Our next review, who are we kidding? We're going to be at home watching Endgame again when it comes out on digital next Tuesday. No, our next review will be Quentin Tarantino's new film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
A little ditty. Pretty. I have no idea what that's about. That should be fun.
It's about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Hmm. Sounds like a lot of cocaine. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Yeah. Bye.
I will formally apologize to the, what are they, the bay notes? The bay high.